Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Protect your family's future with life cover from Zurich. Talk to a financial broker to find out more.
51551 if you want to get in, involved in the next conversation on the new report from the IPCC on climate change. Multiple options to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adapt to climate change are available right now, according to that major new scientific report about climate change from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change published today. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that wealthy countries aiming for carbon neutrality in 2050 or beyond should speed up their goal in order to defuse the climate time bomb. Guterres spoke in a video message as the IPCC experts group issued today's report.
Leaders of developed countries must commit to reaching net zero as close as possible to 2040. The climate time bomb is ticking. But today's IPCC report is a how-to guide to defuse the climate time bomb. It is a survival guide for humanity. As it shows, the 1.5 degree limit is achievable, but it will take a quantum leap in climate action. This report is a clarion call to massively fast-track climate efforts by every country and every sector and on every time frame. In short, our world needs climate action on all fronts, everything, everywhere, all at once.
And that is Antonio Guterres of the UN. Irish climate scientist Professor Peter Thorne was a core author of the report, and he joins me now. Professor Thorne, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
We heard Antonio Guterres call it a survival guide there, and we'll get to the solutions in just a second. But is this report outlining Armageddon once again? Because every time we spoke with George Lee about this, we get one of these reports. We're kind of ashen-faced about how grim a reading it is.
So we tried to take a somewhat different view in this report in terms of the structure, and we followed the Pacific Islanders' storytelling of the Talanoa Dialogue, as it's called in the UNFCCC. So we start with where we are, and it's undoubtedly the case that we are in trouble. We then go with where we might go. So we paint some futures that could plausibly occur and what the implications of those could be. And then we come to the final section, which is, how do we get to where we want to go? And that's really the novel piece, is looking at and highlighting what we can do. It's not hopeless. There is a lot of hope in this report.
The context, though, is that we have this target in the world of trying to keep global warming to not less than 1.5 degrees, but we're nearly at that already. Isn't that right?
The report makes very clear that almost irrespective of what we do in the very short term, we will reach 1.5 degrees at some point in the first half of the next decade. The real difference is if we really double down on climate action in the coming decade and the rest of this decade, we still can hold temperatures at or close to 1.5 degrees. If we continue to prevaricate nationally and internationally, we'll blast right through 1.5, we'll go through 2, we'll end up somewhere even warmer than that. And it's really important to stress that climate impacts do not scale linearly with temperature. 1.5 is much worse than today, 2 is much, much, much worse, and 3 is pretty cataclysmic.
Okay, so let's talk about a rise of 1.6 or just a little bit over 1.5 degrees centigrade. What kind of plants and animals will we lose, or what will we lose, Peter, if we reach that type of global warming?
Well, it's important to stress that we're already feeling the impacts of climate change, and we've already lost certain species, niche species, for example, at the top of the mountains where they can't go any higher to adapt to the changing climate. It's not that we lose certain things at 1.5 or 1.6, it's that it gets worse, and it gets worse quickly the further we warm. We will lose, for example, risk losing the Great Barrier Reef off Australia for permanent basis at somewhere about 1.5-2 degrees is the finding. And one of the findings here is that in this report, was that the impacts will happen much sooner than we thought a decade ago at the time of the last major report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Mm-hmm. So you're basically telling governments around the world, as George Lee told us, we heard there from the UN, you need to speed up whatever targets you have, bring them forward by a decade, speed up the actions. But when we talk to government ministers on this programme in the Irish context, Peter, or representatives from the transport lobby or the farming bodies or so on, they say we are doing as much as we possibly can without losing our livelihoods here. And automatically then, one sector is pitted against another. And it's a very difficult conversation when you get down to the details. So does this report present solutions in that regard?
The report makes very clear that we have the toolkit we need to undertake the action required to limit warming to 1.5 degrees. It requires absolutely everything, everywhere, and now, and at all times into the future. It requires climate-proofing every decision we make. It also recognises that there are national and personal circumstances. It's not providing a story that determines what you can do, what you must do in every country, because Ireland is very, very different from Peru or Mali, and Dublin is very, very different from Kerry. It's different problems with different solutions. We need to stop pitting people against each other, have difficult conversations, come up with solutions that work. We have a very, very large toolkit now of technological, policy and economic tools that we can deploy. We need to get serious about having those conversations and taking that action.
But don't you need political coverage? And we're digressing in one sense, but I'm just wondering if there's anything in the report that that points to political prevarication because of the difficulty in implementing the action required to meet climate targets or even to expedite climate targets. Because if it was one size fits all for Dublin or Kerry or Ireland or Honduras or China, then it would be easy politically. But don't you need political courage to say, yes, it's different in Dublin or it's different in farming, so we have to do more?
Yeah, well, you need the IPCC itself is policy neutral. It's policy relevant, but policy neutral. We can't as a group of scientists tell politicians, tell society what to do. We can provide the scientific basis, the evidence basis. Ultimately, it's for governments to decide. And many of the things that are in there are around good governance. Ireland is leading or in the leading pack. Other aspects, we are not. And you could show that for any country in the world. There is no country that is exemplary in every aspect. We can all learn from each other. There needs to be greater cooperation, greater sharing of experiences, of best practices. We're all in this together. It's not a race to be a winner. It's a race to keep a healthy planet. And we are in this race of our lives.
Very much together, I know that. But some countries then point to the likes of China or India or indeed the US, and they say they are the biggest polluters. They should carry most of the can here.
Well, this gets to vexed issues of historical and ongoing responsibility. And how you slice the pie is where it really goes from science to policy. We know the climate doesn't care. The climate doesn't know whether the carbon dioxide atom has printed on it made in America or made in Ireland or made in Peru. It just cares that it's a carbon atom. So physics is the very cruel mistress in all of this. Physics only cares how much we emit.
I understand that,
but
sorry. The reason I ask that, Peter, is that the IPCC is presenting this as a survival guide. So these are the actions or solutions that could be implemented now. But America, especially the Republican Party in America, for example, will say, well, if we implement some of these solutions now that are in the IPCC report, we lose some of our economic competitiveness. So how do you get around that? Is that addressed?
So it's important to note that it was the UN Secretary General who said it was a survival guide. IPCC stopped short of such policy prescriptiveness. But you're right. It is difficult decisions. National circumstances come into it. Historical responsibility comes into it. These are really, really tricky, vexed issues that we need to grapple with. Ireland's approach, for example, is to say, well, we'll take an equal share of the pain, but we've taken more than an equal share of the gain to get where we are. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should be taking more of the pain than we are currently intending to do so.
Is that would that be something to consider, in your opinion, for the Irish government, to take even more of the pain than we are already doing so?
That becomes the normative political judgment, and in my role in this interview as the IPCC scientist, I can take that position in either direction, but I would just point out that those are the kind of issues that come up.
Can I ask you what is in the report from a scientific point of view, though? You say that clean energy and technology should be used to avoid a growing climate disaster. Now, are you thinking of any kind of technologies in particular there?
It's about deploying the technologies we have. Wind, solar, battery storage, all of these have come down in price massively in the past decade by 80, 90, even more percent. They're now on a levelized cost of energy production lower than fossil fuels. For Ireland in particular, which has no fossil fuel reserves, we would be creating, storing, and possibly even exporting our own energy rather than spending millions of dollars a day importing dirty fossil fuels to feed our energy habit.
Okay. Briefly, a final parting message, Peter, on this one. It's seen as, I must say, I read this report and I feel that it's we're in the last chance saloon in a big way. I know the UN and the IPCC are trying to be very positive about this. What's your parting message to the Irish government here?
We need to think and do everything we can in the context of climate. We need to take decisions that are climate-proofed, otherwise the next generation, today's junior infants, will never forgive us.
OK, Professor Peter Thorne, thank you very much indeed for that. And that is the professor, one of the Irish climate scientists and co-author of this report. Now, any delay in taking action on climate change will have a significant and far-reaching impact on future generations. That's according to today's report from the UN's climate group, the IPCC. Marie Donnelly, chair of the Climate Change Advisory Council, is with me now to give us her reaction to today's report. Marie Donnelly, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed, Cormac.
What do you make of it?
Thank you for taking this item, because I think it's really, really important. The IPCC report has confirmed the signs that we know, which is that we are in the midst of climate change and the direction of travel is not good. Therefore, we must take action, and we must take action urgently. The real challenge, you know, is to move from ambition, you know, high-level statements, political objectives, even legislation, and we have to move into delivery on the ground, and we have to do it everywhere, at every opportunity, by everybody, all of the time.
But down
so
to brass tacks.
It's a really strong message.
They're telling us to move our plans to be carbon neutral by 2050, to move it forward by a decade, and to be carbon neutral by 2040. How do we do that in Ireland?
Well, for developed countries, and remember, it's the developed countries and developed economies that are emitting most of the emissions. They're the ones that have the financial resources to take the action. And, you know, we must play our part here in Ireland. But we have a very clear objective. We have a 51% emission reduction by 2030. Let's get that right. Let's show we can do it. And then we move from there to the second part, which is between 2030 and 2040. So our challenge right now is to get the emission levels down.
Where?
And, you know, it's a challenge.
Where should the government's focus be? Because I spoke with Professor Peter Thorne earlier in the programme. He said perhaps, and I mentioned countries like China and India and the US that emit an awful lot of carbon. He said, well, perhaps we should be taking on more. And I'm paraphrasing now. But where, if that is to be the case, or even if we're to bring forward our targets, where should we focus our attention?
So I would take just three areas. I mean, there's many, many areas, but just let's take three. One is electricity. It's costing us a lot of money at the moment. We import the fossil fuels. We can't control the price. And we've seen the damage it has done to all of us in our bills over the last winter. We have an opportunity. We have the natural resources. We need to capture the natural resources and become independent with our own electricity. That would also be decarbonized electricity using wind and solar. And we need to expand that. You know, obviously, we need the onshore wind, we need the offshore wind, we need the solar. But we need to allow and support people and companies to generate their own power and use some of it themselves and maybe sell some to the grid. So, you know, rolling out solar panels on all the roofs of commercial buildings, for example, schools, sports halls.
But how do you do that, though, with respect? Because the action plan in 21 that was published just 2 years ago, they said then about electricity, the government, that among the most important measures in the plan, they say, is to increase the proportion of renewable electricity to up to 80% by 2030. That was a big ask even then.
It is a big ask, and it is going to be a big ask, but it's one that we can actually deliver. But it's going to take a commitment, obviously, from the government. It's going to take a commitment in terms of financial investment, because some of these are quite big investments and we really need to get the money flowing into them. But it also takes commitment from all of us as individuals and our local leaders, because sometimes this means that we're going to have infrastructure built mm-hmm. close to where we live or play games or go visiting or whatever the case may be. And that's something that, you know, we will ultimately have to cope with ourselves okay. as it goes forward.
You mentioned three areas briefly. Where else?
So another area is, of course, and again, I'm thinking mainly about, you know, how can we save money as individuals, consumers and households? You know, this whole idea of, you know, energy efficiency in the home. We're coming into the summer. So kind of two things to look at, because hopefully the weather's getting a bit better. Firstly, your boiler. How old is it? When was it last serviced? Do you need to take action because it's the summer and you can afford to take, you know, you have a little bit of time to do it? Or can you even change it for something like a heat pump? So look at your heating system and think about what can I do this summer in that? The second is insulation and, you know, draft proofing at homes. You can take the time in the summer when it's a bit warmer to do something in the roof, to do something in the walls, the floors, as the case may be. You know, draft proof your doors, as the case may be. Mm-hmm. Use the time of the summer to do that, because in the end of the day, it's going to save you money and make a nicer, warmer home out of it
okay.
for the wintertime.
Well, look, we're out of time, unfortunately, but we will definitely return to this report and those areas where we can all buy in and change for the good. Marie Donnelly, Chair of the Climate Change Advisory Council, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.